Welcome to RAPcast, the podcast for and by Rheumatology Advanced Practice Providers, where we bring you the latest insights, research, and discussions in the field of rheumatology. I am your host and president of RAP, Amanda Mixon, and today we are diving into a special segment inspired by a segment in our RAP quarterly newsletter called Spotlight Clinical Cornerstones. Spotlight Clinical Cornerstones is an exciting initiative by RAP aimed at highlighting the incredible members of our organization. We believe in giving our members a platform to showcase their expertise and discuss topics that matter most to them. In today's episode, we will be piggybacking off of our latest edition, where we feature one of our exceptional members. This segment is all about elevating their voices and shedding light on the clinical cornerstones that shape their practice. Our guest today is Kayla Alexander, a DNP with a unique lens to view axial spondyloarthritis through that of not only a provider, but as a patient. We're so happy to have you today, Kayla. Would you mind giving our listeners a quick introduction?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. So I work at Seattle Rheumatology Associates with Dr. Meese. That's in Seattle. And prior to that, I was at a different rheumatology private practice in the same area. I'm from California originally, and I moved up to Seattle for grad school. So I graduated from my DNP program at the University of Washington in the beginning of 2020, and I did a primary care residency program at the Seattle VA after graduation, and then I went straight into rheumatology from there. So I'm very happy to be here.
Wow, that's incredible. And obviously, you know, Kayla has given us such important knowledge from a vantage point view of us it's hard to comprehend. You know, we hope to learn from her experience as a provider, but also as a patient. So get ready to be inspired, informed, and engaged as we dive into the world of rheumatology with our featured member, Kayla, on this episode of RAPcast. So it's time to shine the spotlight on our most deserving members. So let's get right into it. I'm just going to ask you some questions. And I always like to start with the journey of you becoming a DNP. So can you tell me what led you to pursue a career in healthcare?
Yeah, so I was a nurse first, and that came about. My dad was hospitalized for interstitial lung disease and autoimmune hemolytic anemia, a pretty extended hospitalization when I was like 18, 19. And so I had a lot of time there to watch the nurses, and it just seemed like a very interesting, meaningful job. So I went to nursing school after that. And that was all in California. And it turned out that I really didn't love the hospital very much, especially just seeing patients very short term. So I decided to get my public health nurse certification, and I was working in community health, and I loved that environment and the long-term relationships with patients. And then the nurse practitioner role was just very appealing because of the challenge, a big step up in terms of just the different ways that you're using your brain and the responsibility for sure. But you still get the long-term relationships that I liked with community and public health. So I started the doctorate program up here at the University of Washington, thinking that I would still be doing public and community health after graduation.
Wow, that's incredible. I kind of feel like I'm going to know the answer to this question, but talk to me about, you know, what drew you to rheumatology. Maybe tell me a little bit about the journey to get here.
Yeah, so I love rheumatology so much. I can't imagine, honestly, working in any other specialty. It's so rewarding. There's so much we're able to do for patients. And the diseases are just so interesting. Like when you have somebody come in with swollen joints everywhere who can hardly walk, and then they come back the next visit and they're like teary-eyed because they can play on the floor with their kids again. That's just amazing. So I think that I would have found my way to rheumatology anyway. But I did take the fast track because the first year of nurse practitioner school, when I first moved up here, I was diagnosed with axial spondyloarthritis, which I had ankylosing spondylitis as they referred to it at the time. And I had honestly probably heard of it once before and didn't know what it was. So had kind of an overnight crash course and became very familiar with rheumatology very quickly. So that was the chaotic introduction, but I do think I would have found my way here anyway, just because I love it so much.
Oh, that's incredible. And I think what a unique perspective that you have. I mean, of course we all, and I think APPs are really good at this in general, but practicing empathy, but I think you obviously live it. And so I'm sure your patients just absolutely love you because you really understand what they're going through. So I think that's so incredible. Let's talk a little bit about your practice in particular. So, we know that APPs have varying roles in rheumatology, and I really think it's important for the APPs that are listening to kind of understand what these roles are, to understand specifically your role. And so to further expand on that, I'd like to understand, do you see new patients, and also what disease states that you see in your practice?
Yeah, so our practice, I work with Dr. Meese and two other APPs, and we have a very collaborative practice. So each APP, we have our own panel of patients, and then we individually decide who Dr. Meese is going to see with us as well. So there's a lot of autonomy with it. And for me, just I'm the newest one. So the other two have been with Dr. Meese for like 15 years. So I think I utilize him probably more. And in the beginning, I was like having him see a bunch of patients with me that now maybe I don't need him quite as much. But in terms of disease states, we see everything really from like bread and butter RA to autoinflammatory syndromes, myositis, vasculitis, everything in between. Dr. Meese does a lot of research in spondyloarthritis, so I think the proportion of those patients is certainly higher than at most rheumatology practices. And then he's doing CAR T for lupus now as well, so more lupus patients. And yes, I see new patients. So usually I see the new patient first, and then I leave the room and consult with Dr. Meese, and we go back in the room together. Sometimes I'll see them entirely on my own when I'm reviewing referrals if somebody is referred for like non-specific joint pain and hasn't had any workup whatsoever, then I'll see them first just to get the ball rolling on everything. And then the second visit will be with me and Dr. Meese.
That's awesome. And obviously, I'm sure a lot of our listeners know who Dr. Meese is. He has been such a champion for APPs. I think both, of course, behind closed doors and outwardly. I think that's something that, is truly remarkable about him. He's been a champion for us for a very long time. So we love Dr. Meese. And obviously you work with Christy Vath, who is on our board, and we love Christy too. So I want to understand also a little bit too about how you were integrated, because as a new APP coming into the field, there's a lot of different ways that APPs are somewhat utilized in a practice and how they're trained and mentored. And why I want to understand this is because I want APPs to be successful. I want them to come into a practice and feel like they are having the proper mentorship and they're able to learn so that they're able to practice at the top of their scope. And obviously, you're in an environment where you can shine. And like to your point, at the very beginning, of course, you kind of do have to utilize your supervising, physician, and you want to do that because, of course, for obvious reasons. But then, the longer you do it, you don't need quite as much support. So what did that journey look like for you? Trying to think of it from the lens of maybe somebody that's going to get started, and maybe we have some physicians that listen to this podcast too. So what they might do to help, a newer APP be successful.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it really is going to depend on the individual APP, what their needs are. For me, at this clinic with Dr. Meese, I had taken over a very well-established panel from a nurse practitioner who had moved on to a different position. And so I just had inherited all of her patients and then kind of got a lot of leeway in terms of which ones I would see with him as well. But it really was kind of just jumping in to the deep end in terms of seeing all the diseases all the time. Whereas at the clinic, the rheumatology practice I was at prior, it was with two different rheumatologists, and we took a different approach with both of them. So, like with one of them, she just moved all of the osteoporosis patients to my schedule. And I started only with osteoporosis and then got that down. And then, after a couple months, started adding RA patients to the panel. So, just taking it disease state by disease state and going slow. And really checking in often and seeing what my comfort level was. And then with the other rheumatologist, he would handpick patients that he knew were stable and would respond well to a nurse practitioner. And then we would see them together for the first visit, and he would introduce me and tell the patient how confident he was in my abilities. And then I would be seeing them alone from then on. So it, there's definitely different approaches, but I think that as long as there's really good communication, on both sides, that there's so many different ways to be successful with it.
I'm curious, as you think about all the ways you've kind of been integrated, is there one way that you liked more?
That's so interesting. I think that in hindsight, taking one disease state at a time, because I could really just do a total deep dive on that one disease, on the medications that worked for that. I think that that was really probably universally the way to go.
I have to say, I have not heard that previously, and I think it's really interesting. And to your point, it does take a little bit more work to actually like funnel through the schedule and say, okay, who are the osteoporosis patients I'm seeing today, or who are the rheumatoid patients I'm seeing? But also really interesting because you would really get very proficient at that disease state if that's all you saw, like day in and day out. It probably wouldn't take that long before you'd feel pretty confident, like, okay, I have this down. I'm ready to move on. Now give me all your rheumatoid patients, or some of the
Exactly.
rheumatoid patients. So
Yeah.
that's super interesting. I think that's a really interesting approach that could be really helpful for new APPs coming out. So kudos to that rheumatologist for doing that. I was kind of in a different situation when I first started, but I think that's a really interesting way to do it.
Yeah, it was great. And especially like with osteoporosis, there's a very small handful of medications to memorize and get really comfortable with, and reading the DEXA scans, and then just like immersing myself in all of the educational, I did like the ICSD training at that time and all the modules available online just for one disease, and really immersing myself for a couple of months, by disease was, I think I just learned so much that way.
That's awesome. Well, again, I'll have to kind of think of this. I'm always thinking, because people ask me all the time, what do you do? What's successful? How do you integrate? I do tend to hear things like, well, I don't want to maybe hire an APP because I'll train them and then they'll leave. And I would say to that, well, I don't think anyone wants like joins a practice because their intention is to leave, and so but sometimes maybe there can be other more successful ways and opportunities to really, allow you to grow and learn and then, want to stay.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
shifting a little bit now to thinking about, students, for example, or someone, so a student or someone that is considering maybe making a change, maybe they're in primary care, maybe they're in subspecialty, but do you have any advice to give to those individuals who are considering a career as an APP in rheumatology? And also, what qualifications or skills do you think are particularly beneficial for success in rheumatology?
I think the networking aspect of it really can't be overstated, and that is something that's totally out of my comfort zone. But just going to conferences, introducing yourself to people, the opportunities will present themselves. Like that first year when I was in primary care, thinking about going to rheumatology. I did have a different nurse practitioner in rheumatology who was like dragging me to all of these conferences. And it was like people, rheumatologists just coming out of the woodwork offering jobs once they like start talking to you and figuring out what your interests are and things. So I think that would be the main thing to just get involved, push yourself out of your comfort zone if it's not your thing. And then in terms of qualities and skills, I think that truly, like a genuine curiosity about the diseases is so important. And I don't know that somebody who doesn't have a curiosity about the diseases would even be interested in rheumatology, but that really is not just required in order to figure out the confusing, perplexing cases, because those come up all the time, but also just because it's so much more engaging on a personal level to go to work when you're really interested in the diseases that you're managing. And like Dr. Meese, he's done this now for 42 years, and he still calls himself a student of psoriatic arthritis. And when there's new PSA patients, he's so interested in their story and how their symptoms developed. And I think if you don't have that natural curiosity about the diseases, it's a lot harder, a lot easier to get burned out. So that I think is just one of the inherent qualities. One other thing I would say with entering rheumatology is there are so many resources online for learning that are super helpful. And I have like a little Excel sheet of them that I can send you as well if people are interested. And there's so many different ways to learn. But I like the boards review course for physicians who are being boarded in rheumatology. I found that to be really helpful, just the structure of it. And all different types like ARP and AWARE, they all have resources online. So there's a lot out there for learning when you're new as well.
Absolutely. And I think we all learn differently. And that's the beauty of it, is that there's so many resources that you will be able to find something that fits your learning style. And I totally agree. And I love that idea of if you are interested or you think you may want to consider a field to going into this field, go to a conference or even listen. I mean, what's also beautiful is there's so many virtual conferences now that even if you don't have the means to kind of get or fly or whatever, you're in school or you're in, again, a different specialty and maybe you've already used your CME, you can get online, you can attend a conference, and often they're affordable. And to see if this is really a field that you might be interested in. But a big point that you made, which I can't understate enough, is really this idea of networking and being amongst other people that are doing it. And I think that's so important. And I think that is one thing that kind of separates RAP from some of the other ones, is just that we're all APPs and we're learning from each other and we are networking with each other. And so yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think those are all really, really good tips for people that are considering this as a career for them. And hopefully, again, we'll come into the field and stay in the field, because that's what we want. We want people to come in and love it as much as I can tell you do, as much as I do, and want to have this be their career. So to shift a little bit to your piece, you discussed the perspective from the intersection of clinician and patient regarding axial spondyloarthritis. Can you elaborate on this dual perspective and how that informs treatment decisions and patient care strategies?
Yeah, so one thing I had mentioned in the article that I've found to be very helpful practically in clinic is when we're trying to figure out whether or not a therapy is effective, how to do that with a disease state that doesn't have objective signs of disease often, and doesn't have the most robust disease activity measures. And there's BASDAI and ASAS, which are for clinical trials. Not that you can't use them in clinic, but it's not always feasible and doesn't necessarily translate to the patient understanding what we're even talking about. So one thing I found to be really helpful, I know patients love to track their symptoms, some patients, but I think that maintaining that level of vigilance can really backfire. So when we're asking the brain to focus on what's wrong, I think that can really work against us, because we immediately forget a lot of the things that used to be going wrong that are now going right, because the brain is just wired to protect us. And once things aren't a problem anymore, they're not on our mind. So we might take that 20% of residual symptoms and be tracking it and blow it out of proportion. And it seems like maybe the medication isn't working. So to mitigate this, I think the strategy I've found to be most helpful is to take out a sheet of paper or like the app, the notes app on your phone, not your phone, but the patient's phone during the time when they first present to you or when you're starting therapy, switching therapy, and write down all the symptoms that they're having. So very, very specific and very subjective things. So like when you wake up in the morning, what are some of the activities that you would want to do, but you decide to hold off until the afternoon because you know it's going to be easier physically? Or do you have a hard time like looking in your blind spot or gripping your toothbrush in the morning or buttoning buttons? Or you only go for a 10-minute walk when you want to go for a 60-minute walk? Or how many times a night do you wake up? Just all those things, like fill the page with it and then put it away, put the phone away, put the paper away. Tell your brain the job's done. You don't need to track anything for now. Thank you for your help. And then you take that back out 12 weeks later when we're going to determine whether or not the therapy is working. And I try to do this in my notes as well. So, like anything that the patient mentions, like that, how they feel like they're 90 years old in the morning and they're hobbling to the bathroom, I put that in my note. And then when it's 12 weeks later and we're figuring out if it's working, I'll read that all back to them. And 9 times out of 10, they've forgotten that they said all of those things. And this has come from my experience with this because I wasn't like an Excel sheet tracker the way some patients are with their symptoms. But once you know that you have a disease, once you are told that there's this dysfunction that's going on, your brain just pays attention in ways that aren't necessarily more functional than taking more of a macro approach and thinking more broadly, I think is rather than like, today I had 35 minutes of morning stiffness and yesterday was 32 minutes. And what does this mean? Like, I don't think that that's really all that helpful.
Yeah, it's kind of like, really focusing on the branches and then kind of losing sight of the whole tree.
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting, again, everything you said today has been so interesting. But I really like that, and I don't know about you, but I often tell my patients, like, please don't go. I mean, I think support groups can be really helpful, so I shouldn't say that. But sometimes you can kind of go down a rabbit hole, and you have to kind of remember that, when you're seeing a lot of negative, 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 right? Like, because oftentimes the people that are doing really well aren't maybe not the people that are, perhaps writing something. And so just trying to put it all into perspective, I think, is really important for our patients. And also, I like that approach because then they can look back, okay, that was 12 weeks ago. And now here we are today. Look at how far I've come. And that, I think, is a really a way to kind of look at that half glass full instead of, a half glass empty. So I think it's really utilizing the brain to work for us instead of against us. Is there
Exactly.
anything else that you might recommend to our listeners to kind of keep in mind when they're caring for a patient with axSpA?
I think one other thing I would say, I don't think I mentioned this in the article. The question about like what else can I do besides medication? So like what diet do you recommend? Things like that, I think comes up all the time, probably for everybody. And that's a really challenging question when we don't have any high quality data to guide us, which we just don't really. And I think that's really sad because there's probably a lot there that we're missing. But it's just the nature of the intervention. Like, you can't placebo control diet to create high quality studies. And most likely, everybody responds a little bit differently anyway. So, I think that our standard response of, like, well, there's no evidence for or against that, don't do anything differently, can be really deflating for the patient because that's something that they can do. They're asking, what can I do to help myself? And for us to say, nah, there's not really anything. That it kind of loses that sense of empowerment that they're looking for. And it also just feels like a missed opportunity for me personally, because I do feel like all of that, the other stuff is half the battle. The sleep, stress, diet, exercise probably should have been mentioned first. And just the mental health aspect of it. So having an enjoyable life with meaningful things that I love doing and social support, all of that I truly think is half of it. And then biologics are the other half when we're talking about what impacts pain or not. So I wouldn't say, like, I don't recommend any diet or anything like that. But what I do say is that in the absence of scientific evidence, I think that the body is very wise, and we really overlook that with the Western medical model that we use. But listening to the body when it's what we have, I think can really guide us in the right direction. So, when do you feel your best physically? Is it when you've eaten foods that are whole foods, home cooked foods, or is it processed foods? Is it when you've had a good night's sleep and you worked out in the morning and then you meditated and you are well connected with people socially and you have people who support you, who hear you? Like, everybody feels better that way. So I think, like, if you're in that physical and mental space where you feel well, it can make such a huge difference. And those are, there's so many, like, all those things that I just mentioned are all very actionable things that people can take control of. And just having some control over the disease also is really helpful.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you bring that up. So when I used to get asked, which was, a long time ago, I used to be like, ah, I don't really know. There's no data. It may be Mediterranean, but who knows? And I have totally switched my approach. And what I say to patients is because I truly believe this too. I think what we put in our body either helps us or hurts us. And then I kind of say to the patient, you know how you feel when you don't eat well, right? And when you go out and really eat poorly, you know how you feel the next day. Versus, to your point, when you've eaten at home, whole foods, less processed, less sugars, etc. And then think about that more holistically, and then adding the sleep and the stress, all of those things. I think also, to your point, I think it then puts, something that the patient can do that's not just take this prescription and fill it, and then life is going to change for you. Because, as we both know, it's not just a medication. Yes, the medications are absolutely wonderful, and I agree with you. It's like that's, I mean, and they've changed rheumatology. We don't see people in wheelchairs anymore. I mean, so of course, but it's not just that. And I think the truly most successful people that I have seen, the people that I see that are 80 plus, that are still, like, you wouldn't even know that these people have anything wrong with them, are the people that have good diets, that exercise, and that try to mitigate their stress and sleep well. So I think there is more, like, data that's coming out on this. And it's not, again, it's not super complex. We know how we feel when we're doing well versus when we're not. So I couldn't agree more. And I think that's so important for our listeners. Is there anything else that we haven't discussed, or anything that you feel you haven't had the opportunity to educate our listeners on before we wrap up today?
I think maybe just the last thing I would say that's coming from, again, like the patient clinician perspective, that is helpful for clinicians potentially is that, like, you know, objectively that, like, being a young person with a chronic painful disease isn't a great thing. But I think what we don't see as the clinician is that it can be very lonely. And it feels so common as the healthcare provider when you have a whole patient panel with all these diseases. But for the individual patient, I think it can be really isolating. And to your point about the support groups, oftentimes, I mean, you know, again, nothing against support groups, but it can be kind of a negative place sometimes that when people aren't doing well. And so for the average patient, I think this 20-minute appointment that they have with you or however long may really be the only time they have where somebody is seeing them and somebody can truly understand and hear them. And that alone can be so therapeutic. And from our perspective as the clinician, coming in and seeing your schedule all day long with this conveyor belt of patients, and then you get a dozen MyChart messages every time you check your inbox, it's like it becomes very transactional. Like, okay, I'm sitting in front of you. What do you need from me? What can I give to you? How fast can we do this? When in reality, really, what may be valuable to them is that somebody is just recognizing their struggle, and that can be so therapeutic, and that may really just be all they need that day and can have such an impact.
I think that gets really to what we kind of talked about at the very beginning of the episode, which is empathy. And you obviously are in a very unique, situation where, you can do that day in and day out. And I think, again, I do think that's something that, everyone, I think in rheumatology, we know this is the type of specialty that it is. But we have that. And that's, I think one of the things that separates us from maybe some of the other specialties. So I totally agree. Well, this has been incredible. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on our podcast. I think that our listeners will really enjoy it and will learn something. So all that to say, thanks so much for joining us on this enlightening episode of Rapcast. We extend our heartfelt gratitude to Kayla for sharing her expertise and passion with us today. Through her insights, we've gained a deeper understanding of the transition from primary care to rheumatology and also what it's like being a patient and a clinician at the same time. Please be sure to stay connected and be the first to hear about our upcoming episodes by following our podcast. Don't forget to explore the RAP ecosystem further, which continues to grow. Please download our RAP ACE app for an enhanced experience. You can visit our website at rap.org. You can connect with us at Twitter at RoomAPP and also Instagram at RoomAPP for all the latest updates, content, and exciting announcements. Together, let's embark on a journey of knowledge and empowerment for advanced practice providers in rheumatology. And with that, I'm your host, Amanda Mixon, and we'll see you next time.